All right, thank you for that, and welcome back to the show. Rick Tittle with you. That's a little Christopher Cross, and we have another CC, Christopher Kane, with us in studio because he's along with my co-host, Karen Lyle, as on Tuesdays in the first hour, we do SalesSportTalk.com, which has to be the only nationally syndicated radio show in the history of the world to talk sailing on a weekly basis because, Karen, it is your passion, isn't it?
It has become so, yes. I was born into it, and I am going strong.
Also, no one gives you more pregame, so to speak, on the America's Cup, which is months away, than we do. And Christopher Kane, that is your fort, isn't it, the America's Cup?
Oh, boy, if that's my forte, that's a pretty low bar there.
Christopher, how are you doing over there in the studio? We're here stuck at home, and you get to sit in the beautiful studio with all those signatures.
I get to sit on Rick's throne. It is quite a fabulous piece of furniture. The rhinestones kind of hit you in weird places, but, you know, it's nice.
It's better than the bed of nails that used to be in there.
Or the throne of lies.
Yeah. So, Karen, you got Chris. What's going on today here, kid?
Well, you know, we have added some photographs to our platform if you go to salesporttalk.com. You remember last week, the week before last, we were talking to Sir Robin Knox Johnson. And the very next day, he went on a ride of his life on Britannia, Ineos' team's competitive boat for the America's Cup. And he sent me photographs of him on the boat with Ben Ainslie, and you'll remember Ben from the San Francisco America's Cup that we had here. He was a tactician, plus he's just a really amazing sailor with many credits to his name, including Olympian. And so today we're just talking about, you know, the Clipper Race meeting the team Ineos and about America's Cup and all that kind of stuff. So, Christopher, tell us a little bit about the photograph of Sir Robin sitting on the back of Britannia. He was sitting in the port side stern. And, you know, what is it that you noticed when you were looking at those photographs about the construction and design of this boat?
Well, I mean, first let's talk about what a great ride he got. You know, Sir Robin is a legendary ocean racer, has at one point had the record for the fastest circumnavigation in a race of the globe, has been through storms and the Southern Ocean. And this guy is about as battle-hardened a sailor as you can imagine. And he had this look of awe and amazement on his boat, on the boat, which I found the most fabulous part, because if you're going to dazzle Sir Robin Knox Johnson, you got to bring it, because there's pretty much nothing on a boat this guy hasn't seen or experienced. But like I experienced when I got on the big cats here in San Francisco, the speed and the acceleration are really quite amazing. But one of the things that he talked about, and I think this is interesting in terms of, you know, we're starting to see some near accidents on the boats as they're starting to train and they're starting to up their speeds down in New Zealand. And one of the things he talked about was how flat the boat was. You know, normally in a monohull sailboat, when the wind starts to blow, the boat starts to keel over. And as a sailor and as someone driving that boat, you learn to sort of feel it. The same way that race car drivers talk about how they can feel their front wheels when they're going into a curve. You can feel the weight of that boat start to shift. You can feel the pressure move. And there's ways that a monohull in the water starting to load up can tip you off when bad things are starting to happen. And one of the things about these boats is they're very stable up until the moment they're not. And, you know, it doesn't have that tell. They talk about cars that don't give you any information before the back end comes out. And we're starting to sort of see this, that these boats look great until they don't. And that I think is one thing Sir Robin talked about was, you know, the feedback you're getting in these boats when you're not getting that healing action. You're not being able to feel the weight move in the boat and the pressure build. And it's just flat on that hydrofoil, no matter how much pressure is being put on it, until things happen. And that was the most interesting part to me.
Christopher, tell us a little bit more about Team Ineos, because I remember the Tour de France, they used to have Team Sky from the network there, which turned into Team Ineos. Is this the same
It's the same
outfit?
And just like you'll see, you know, beer companies and banks sponsor a lot of advertising in parks here in the United States for sports. Team Ineos, and it's Ineos, actually. Team Ineos is definitely a big sponsor, along with people like Vodafone in Europe, who sponsor a lot of different sports and leagues. And yeah, they took over for the Beeb with the Tour de France, and now they are the major backer for the America's Cup. And you know, you need big backers, because what has happened with these new boats, and it started with the catamarans and has continued to this class, is you need a lot of computers, you need a lot of data, you need a lot of processing, you need a lot of wind tunnel work. This is, you know, we all loved watching SpaceX this weekend. But there's quite a lot of engineering and science that goes into these boats, and you need big backers. You see Boeing part of these. You see Airbus as part of these. Not surprisingly, boats, companies like Boeing and Airbus, who have experience and history and models for what liquid dynamics over foils look like, which is basically what you're doing now with these sailboats.
All right. Well, let's go to the Piano Finders call-in line. By the way, it is open at 800-878-PLAY. Once again, Piano Finders call-in line, 800-878-7529. And we have Carol up there in El Dorado Hills. Go ahead, Carol.
Well, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Carol.
Good. Hey, I have a question about America's Cup. I volunteered for the one in San Francisco in 2013. Loved volunteering. Since it's in New Zealand and they're not taking a lot of people in, is there still going to be volunteer opportunities for people abroad?
Well, I mean, that really depends on the syndicates. I think you're going to see a lot of that happen. I think if the second America's Cup syndicate from America actually manages to sneak in, I think there could be opportunities for that. It's a lot harder now. I think in the past, like in Valencia, in the good old days of the big monohulls, you could troop down there and find gigs. I think with COVID, it's going to be a lot more difficult. And in fact, when American Magic, the first American team, got down there, they had to get a special dispensation to get into the country. And they still had to be quarantined, which is why you're just seeing them on the water this week. So you know, it's a lot harder now, unfortunately, because you're right. One of the great things about the America's Cup is there's always been a large volunteer army around it, and that's part of what makes it fun.
Thanks for the call, Carol. Appreciate it. Once again, lines are open at 800-878-PLAY. Go ahead, Karen.
You know, I was wondering about the sound on the boat when you're lifting the hull out of the water. And so I asked Sir Robin, because he is right now sailing across the Bristol Channel and couldn't call into the show. But he sent me this note. He said, "It just has some creaking as the loads are applied, and then a modest hum at speed." And I also noticed that he mentioned in that he has a lot of chatter going on, because all of the team are talking to each other about the trim and about, you know, adjusting the boat, especially as they go through those turns. Christopher, what is your opinion about the movement of that boat and how the experience is for the person riding in it, who's not necessarily
riding,
part of the team?
Riding in a big foiling boat is strange, because there is you do hear things differently. And the boat, he's right about the boat vibrating. I experienced the same thing on the cast in San Francisco. And you definitely feel that humming, kind of like the whole boat's kind of vibrating, and you pick that up. There's different sounds. You're a lot more aware of the wind, and you're a lot more aware of the whistling. And it's definitely a different set of noises. And again, I think for sailors who are used to feeling and hearing a boat and kind of picking up telltales that things are going well or things are about to go poorly, I think there's a different set of instincts that the sailors are having to develop now in terms of what is the boat telling me right now, and what does that mean for what's coming up. And, you know, again, for someone who's raced monohulls my entire life, a boat feels a certain way to me. And these boats don't feel like that. And so that's going to be a learning experience. And they were just kind of getting their arms around the catamarans. And now we've bounced to another new class. And that learning process has to start all over again.
That's Christopher Kane in our studios in downtown San Francisco. Karen Lyle, a co-host of SailSportTalk.com in the East Bay Hills, as am I, your host, Rick Tittle. We still have another segment to go with Christopher, and we welcome your calls. It's in the Piano Founders guest line, which is 800-878-PLAY. You can also shoot us an email. Those will come straight to me, rick@sportsbyline.com. But encourage you. I'm a neophyte at sailing, as you can probably tell from my questions. But if you're an expert sailor, we have two of them with us as well. So the line is 1-800-878-PLAY. Once again, 1-800-878-7529. We'll take a quick break. Come on back with another segment. I'm Rick Tittle on Sports Byline.
I wonder if my parents will ever be apart. My mommy's job is a knife. I thrill to see her and daddy's wife. And daddy swings a gun.
This is Karen Lyle with SailSport Talk, and I'm here today with Paul Kayard, who is in the class of 2020 for the Bay Area Sports Hall of Fame. And this is the first time, Paul, that sailing and a sailor has been included in this Bay Area Sports Hall of Fame. Congratulations on that commendation that the city of San Francisco has given to you.
Well, I'm truly honored as a Bay Area native. I grew up following a lot of the players and athletes that are in the Bay Area Sports Hall of Fame. And so to be included is a personal honor, but it's the first time the sport of sailing has been included. And I think it's merited. And so I'm really happy for my sport to also have representation in the Bay Area Sports Hall of Fame.
This is an international broadcast that goes out to 168 countries and 82 million people. It's broadcast on the American Forces Network, Stitcher, on TuneIn, on iHeartRadio. I think there's 700 radio stations around the world that carry this. We're talking about San Francisco because San Francisco is one of the first cities to include sailing as a sport, which is really surprising to me. I mean, why hasn't sailing been included? It's an amazing sport. What is it about sailing that you feel merit being put side by side with football, baseball, basketball, tennis, soccer, golf, etc.?
Well, like a lot of sports, we certainly at the professional level, we train just as hard as any other athletes. You know, sailing's been in the Olympics since 1928, so it's one of the oldest sports in the Olympic Games. I've gone to the Olympics twice, and it's really nice to mix with all of the people who have the same dedication, commitment to excellence that the sailors have. You know, San Francisco Bay is one of the epic and iconic places for sailing. And so to have grown up on the Bay was a huge advantage for me in terms of developing my skill set to go and race all over the world as well as all around the world.
You take your life more at risk in many ways because out on the ocean, you've done ocean sailing and also sailing inside the Bay.
Yes.
Tell us about some of the ocean races that you've competed in.
Well, I've raced around the world twice, and I was the first American to win the Whitbread Around the World race in 1998. And that's it's like car racing a little bit. It's a risky occupation. We have had deaths, and we have had boats sink. There's icebergs. There's massive mountainous waves in the Southern Ocean and gales in terms of really strong winds. So, there's a risk in sailing that's probably different than baseball, basketball, and football has some risks of physical injury, obviously. But sailing, you can lose your life in an instant.
And the training is essential.
Of course, the training is essential. There's, you know, different types of training for a race around the world compared to an America's Cup race or an Olympic race. But we are just as committed and dedicated and focused as any other athlete. It's great that the Bay Area Sports Hall of Fame has recognized this.
This is Karen Lyle of SailSport Talk.
Rick Tittle back with you on Sports Byline USA and AFN and the Apropos applications, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, And also a little Twitch going here the first hour, Christopher Kane in studio, and of course the co-host of SalesportTalk.com on Tuesdays in the first hour, Karen Lyle, is with us. And I always try to throw a bone in for the people who are new to this. So, Christopher, let me just ask you, and not to be patronizing, but the America's Cup, is it a best of, you know, like the World Series, first one to get to four wins, or is it a race down to that buoy, go around it, and come back, and we'll time you? How do they find a champion?
Yes, and it's pretty easy to explain, because the America's Cup works almost exactly like no other sport in the world. So it's confusing. And let's back up and talk about how we start a new America's Cup. This is a little bizarre. You'll see the American syndicate, the American team, being called a challenger. Well, what does a challenger mean? Well, there are challengers, and then there's the team that won the last America's Cup, which is the defender. So the way the season, if you will, starts is imagine the NFL, where they start a new season, and the Kansas City Chiefs, since they won the last Super Bowl, they're already in the next Super Bowl, and it's up to everyone to fight it out to see who challenges them. So the first thing I understand is the New Zealand team is already in the America's Cup because they are the defender. They are defending the cup. Everyone else has to battle it out to get in there. So that is one American team right now, possibly two. That's a whole other conversation. We have the British team we've been talking about, INEOS. And we have the Italian syndicate, Prada. And they will start going at it the beginning of next year. They'll start doing some test races at the end of this year. All the boats will be down in New Zealand by September. And then at the end of the year, you'll see a little tournament, a little regatta to shake everything down. And then the actual cup starts in January. And those three challengers will battle it out for the right to challenge the Australian boat in the actual America's Cup itself in March. And then it's like a normal World Series, you know, best out of four, best out of seven, best out of nine. Then it looks like a normal playoff. But up to that point, it's a little strange because the defender is already in. Isn't that great?
That's great. Can I do a follow-up real quick?
Sure.
Say a best of, what are we talking about? First one to get to a finish line or first one to go there and come back? How does it go?
Yeah, so the course is for these boats, because they're so fast, it's basically like a racetrack, a horse racetrack. It's just a big U, and they go up and down that, I believe, it's seven times. And they'll go, you know, they'll start, go to what's called a wing mark that'll get them into the racetrack, then down, back, down, back, down for the finish. And so it's I believe it's seven, but don't hold me to that. And then the first boat that crosses the finish line wins that particular race, and then you go at it again the next day. But there's only two boats in the actual America's right. Cup. It gets burned down, which is why the slogan for the America's Cup, and it's not really been the official slogan, but it pretty much is, which is there is no second. There is no second in the America's Cup. You're either first or you're last, because there's only two boats.
You know, I wanted to bring to your attention, Christopher, that I did just add the link for those photographs so that people can see not only Britannia with Father Knox on it, but also the video that's on there. And the photographs that were shared with us, Christopher, tell us about the photographer that was part of that.
Yeah, that's Cameron Gregory. You can find him on Facebook at CameronGregoryPhotography.com. At Facebook.com, you can find him as Cameron Gregory Photography. And he's got these fabulous shots of Team INEOS up on their foils. And one of the things you can see is a couple things. First off, you can see, again, as we were talking earlier, how flat these boats are. And that's going to be a hard read for the helmsman, for the people driving it. But you also can see in America's Cup past with the big monohulls, because you wanted the boat kind of balanced, all the sailors were kind of down the middle of the boat, right? Because they had everything centered. You had the weight in the middle of the boat where it would do the most help. And you had the grinders, the people powering the hydraulics that moved the sails and the foils. They were down the center line of those big, like the USA 76. on these boats, if you go look at these pictures, and you can find these again at sailsporttalk.com and go to the post for today's broadcast, and you'll see the link to these photos. You'll see that instead of having the grinders down the middle of the boat, there's actually grinders on either side and then like a hump, a fairing almost down the middle. And the reason for that is because the hull, what we would traditionally consider the hull of a sailboat, is really doing almost no sailing at all. The boat spends its entire time up on the foil. So that hull becomes less about how can I move this thing efficiently through the water, and it becomes how efficiently can I move this thing through the air, because that's basically where it's spending its time. So this is – the hull is almost being treated like an airplane now instead of a boat. So the benefit to having the sailors split up and low and then a fairing down the middle that's nice and smooth is you've basically turned that hull into a big wing, and you're just creating more drive and more force for that boat. If you look at the front of these boats, there is no bow, right? We consider the front of a sailboat to kind of look at this. This is the deck. Here's the front of the boat, and it looks like a cruise ship or a battleship. And these boats almost look like cigars. Everything is being done to try and make them as aerodynamically efficient, not for the water, but for the air. And this is the first time we've ever really seen this in an America's or really any kind of boat. And it's interesting because the front of the boats on the four syndicates are very different. And I suspect we may see, you know, as the Challenger races start, that some people may be right and somebody may be really wrong. And we're just going to have to see how that plays out. Remember, these are the first boats. The syndicates will be splashing, putting a new boat into the water before September. So we'll see the second generation boats. But this is a whole new area for the America's Cup. How do you make your boat efficient through the air instead of through the water?
Well, that's interesting, Christopher, because is it a rule you have to go monohull? Because I remember as a kid doing channel crossing from like Folkestone to Ostend, and you're on this single hull cattle boat that took all day. And then from like Dover to Boulogne, you had this thing called a Sea Cat,
yep,
dual hull, and it would get you over there in like 45 minutes. Anybody who's come from Larkspur can tell you the difference between the dual hull and the single hull.
Yep.
So is it a rule this time around that it's single hull?
Weirdly, it's never really been specified in the America's Cup. And this actually wound up creating a very famous lawsuit in the 80s down in San Diego, where the Kiwis raced what wound up being the largest monohull ever raced in the America's Cup, with these gigantic wings that dozens of sailors would sit on to keep it from tipping over. And Dennis Conner came in with a catamaran. And the Kiwis sued and said, you can't do that. You can't race a catamaran against a monohull. And actually, Dennis Conner won, because it does not specify in the deed of gift, the contract that rules the America's Cup, whether it has to be a monohull or a catamaran or a multihull, which is why you saw them go to catamarans for a couple of years, including San Francisco, and now we're back to monohulls. It actually doesn't specify it. And if you go back and look at this lawsuit, it's a famous lawsuit in America's Cup, and actually leads back to one of the earliest jokes about the America's Cup, who was notorious for playing with the deed of gift to give themselves advantages. And I believe it was Tom Sopwith or Sir Thomas Lipton who said, Britannia rules the waves, but America waves the rules.
Well, is it a gentleman's agreement that we're all going to race the same type of craft?
I wouldn't say it's a gentleman's agreement. Like every America's Cup, the deed of gift and the terms for that America's Cup, it's a tortuous process. Let's put it that way. So I wouldn't say gentleman's agreement. But yes, they do all come to an agreement fairly quickly. And part of the reason I think they went to these monohulls is the price and the engineering and the risk that was in those big catamarans they used in San Francisco. In retrospect, they probably pushed the envelope a little too far, those boats. And they were hoping by going back to a monohull that they were able to lower the cost a little bit and get more syndicates, more teams into the America's Cup. Now, this is, again, a brand new class. So they didn't see the effect this time. But if they stay with this boat the next America's Cup, I expect we'll double the amount of challengers.
And I think we had the Stars and Stripes team that was allowed to compete in the race, but we hadn't seen them create a boat. And I understand they petitioned for using a boat that already exists for the race, and we're waiting for the America's Cup to ruling on that.
Yeah, there's a couple stories around this. I mean, not stories. There's a couple angles on this. The first angle is, of course, Stars and Stripes. The second America's Cup syndicate has not been able to pay the full $3 million to get in. There's a $3 million payment you have to pay to get in. They paid $1 million, and they've started construction on their boat but have not finished it, which means they're losing a lot of data and a lot of knowledge because, as we mentioned before, lots of engineering, lots of data in these new boats, and they're missing all of that because they don't have a boat in the water. So they are petitioning, as I mentioned, each syndicate is building a second boat. And they are petitioning right now to basically buy the first New Zealand boat off them when they move to their second boat. Now, will it be competitive? Probably not. But at least they'll be able to start to get to know these boats in the water, start building data, and start having knowledge. The way the deed of gift is written, they can't actually race that boat in the final America's Cup. And there's a whole lot of sequencing to that. But this at least would get them on the water and starting to understand these boats. Now, you know, for the America's Cup overall, obviously another syndicate is good. But there is some rumbling that Prada and Ineos are not pleased with this because since they would be racing New Zealand's old boat against the Challengers at the end of the year, the Kiwis would be able to look at it and say, well, that's kind of a proxy for how our boat could perform. Because remember, the Challengers all fight it out amongst themselves. But one of the funny things about the America's Cup, until that first race of the actual America's Cup, you actually don't know if the Challenger is faster or slower than the Defender because they haven't raced against each other. The Challengers all know how well they do against each other, but there's no frame of reference. And we've had America's Cups where the Challengers have fought it out tooth and nail. Everyone goes, boy, that doesn't look like there's a very strong Challenger. And then they actually get in against the Defender and just knock them off the water because the Defender had no way to compare their speed. They only race against themselves until the actual America's Cup. So in a weird way, it actually benefits the Challengers by letting them fight it out. So the complaint is by having New Zealand's old boat in the challenging series, the Kiwis can kind of get some proxy information that you normally wouldn't have. So that's one of the complaints against it.
All right. Very well. We're out of time. Christopher Kane, once again, thank you so much. And Karen, where should people go? Check out the pictures and such things.
Then we'll go to sailsporttalk.com and just click on the Let's Talk America's Cup August 4th. Open it up. There is a nice, I put the whole long link in there. Just click on it. You're going to get to the album and the video and all the things we talked about. And thanks to Team Ineos for sharing those photographs with us. I really appreciate that.
All right, you two. Thanks as always. I'm Rick Tittle. We'll take a quick break and we'll come on back on Sports Byline USA.